Welcome to the I Am Sick Agile Revolution. This is Renee.
Do you say I am sick of the Agile Revolution?
No, I'm just really sick. Still. I've been sick since...
Why did we get her to do the intro, Tony?
I have no idea. I've had a flu, then a cold, then a virus, then a cold.
Fine. Mm-hmm. Someone else do it then.
All right. Welcome to the Agile Revolution, which has a snot fest.
Hey, Renee. Yeah. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling really... I'm better. I can actually hear now. And I had lived for like 6 weeks with no hearing in my right ear. But probably no one cares about that whatsoever. But it did stop me from going onto a plane to Agile Atlanta, which I'm bitterly disappointed with. Hi, everybody.
What'd you say? I'm sorry I didn't hear.
Moving on.
It never gets old.
Quickly, very quickly.
Hi, Tony but here.
And I'm Craig. I'm not sick either.
And we're back together again.
After many, many eons. Yeah. Back when I was healthy, that was the last time we were together.
So the last time we met, 17 men had got together on a mountain, and they'd and they'd come up with 4 values and 12 principles. What's happened since then, Renee?
I think Agile's dead since then.
Yeah,
long live agility. Mm-hmm. Agile's dead. Correct.
Yes.
So welcome to the Lean Revolution. This is Craig.
Oh, it's going
Does anyone
to be
have
of,
anything to talk about?
It's going to be one of those podcasts, is it? Hang in there, people. Strap yourselves in.
Do either of you have something to talk about?
I can find things to talk about, absolutely.
Yes. What about you, Renee?
No, I don't have anything to talk about. I've been sick. I've been busy.
So this is not new, because we haven't caught up in a long time. I want to talk about the latest edition of the Scrum Guide.
What? There's another one? Like the latest?
Yeah, the July update. Have you seen this, Tony?
Yes.
So what do you think of the changes?
Craig, I don't think that any of the changes they've made to the Scrum Guide in the last, I don't know how long, have made a difference to it. And has anybody actually read any of the changes? What do you think?
So you're saying you don't know what the changes are, Tony?
Correct.
Right. Why'd you just say that? All right. So,
because I was being funny. Have you not noticed?
Just wait. I'm going to scrumguides.org, download the latest version in English,
we'll wait for everybody to catch up.
Oh, it is there.
Have you
so
not
when,
noticed
you it, when you Google it, it's coming up with the 2013, which was the old version. Right. Okay, moving on.
How about you elucidate while we ruminate, Craig?
Oh, what's changed, Craig? Just tell us. We're bored.
That's what I just said.
So all they did was they put the Scrum values into the guide. So now the Scrum actually has some value. I mean values.
But it already had values.
No, it didn't.
No, but people who knew Scrum already knew it had values.
Yeah, but it wasn't the
it's
Scrum
not like
guide.
It's brand new.
And if it's not in the Scrum guide, they're not the rules of the game. So therefore, until now, you weren't supposed to have any values if you did Scrum. That's the way I read it.
Okay,
can I go back to my previous statement at the beginning? I don't think anybody knew there were any changes.
Well, this took the world by storm. Everybody was like, awesome, there are finally values in the Scrum Guide. Do you know what they are? I didn't think so.
Individuals and interactions over.
So the 5 values
so
are...
So about responding for change, transparency, inspection, adaption.
No.
I know, commitment, courage, focus, openness, and respect. Yes, I didn't know those ones.
They're the ones, yes. So what do you think?
Well, I already knew them.
Yeah.
So, as I said, nothing new.
But when those values are embodied and lived by the Scrum team, the Scrum pillars of transparency, inspection, and adaption come to life and build trust for everyone. Scrum team members team and explore those values as they work with the Scrum events, roles, and artifacts. There you go. couple of new sentences.
Wow.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All levity aside, I think I'll go back to what Renee said. Anybody who's been doing Scrum for some period of time already knew and already did the values just because they weren't in the book. Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, people always had values, right? And if they were,
yeah,
if they were following the manifesto from the point of view of values, then yeah, sure, they already knew them. But I know I'm just trying to figure out why they thought it so important to put the values in the first place.
That's a good question.
Hmm.
The pillar of transparency. When did Scrum have that a pillar of transparency there? When was that there?
It's a good question. I don't know the answer.
I don't think it was ever in there earlier.
I think that's news. Wouldn't say, and I think, you know, when you think of transparency, different things come to mind. It's transparency of information verbally through the collaboration and the interactions. But I think there's transparency of work, I guess, visually, and that's more what I come to mind with. I really wouldn't have said that Scrum is very transparent, but I agree, inspect and adapt is the heart of it.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it's one of those things. Those three pillars have always been there, inspect, adapt, transparency. But, yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I'll have to go look at the old version.
I don't know the answer, to be honest. But, I mean, really.
I think the thing's interesting about it, that value of commitment too, because commitment got removed, didn't it? Out of sprint planning ages ago.
Did it?
Yep. It was a big hoopla back in 2013 about it. And yeah. Scrolling down to sprint planning, it's not even there. So the irony being a value associated with something that's been taken out. But that courage, focus, openness and respect, they're awesome.
They are, but I guess the question I want to know is, why did it take this long to put them in? And if so, what was the push to put them in?
Yeah, that would be interesting to understand why all of a sudden they felt the need to put them in there.
I would have thought that was obvious, the whole being versus doing Scrum.
Yeah, but I guess what was the push now? Because that's nothing new.
Yeah, but maybe they were finding too many people were treating the Scrum guide like a roadmap or a recipe to do Scrum, but not to be Scrum.
Yeah, well, let's always face it. The minute you have a book that gives you the step-by-step guide, it becomes a cookbook. It's not safe, does as well, right? So that's the problem.
Yeah, the one thing I will give the Scrum guide, though, it's certainly not a cookbook. I don't think it ever will be. I mean, the fact that they can write it in so few pages is a good thing. The fact that they haven't felt obliged to turn it into, you know, for example, the Scrum Body of Knowledge, which I know Renee has a copy of.
I do. I when I'm bored at night, I take it out and I think, oh, this is really awesome.
And I know that because I carried two copies of them back in my luggage from the US a year ago.
Because in fairness, I could have fit it in, and
that's it's so
I really
big and heavy.
Bring it back for shits and giggles. And everyone that I showed it to has shits and giggles over it, especially the area where they talk about change management and change requests. It's really awesome. Sorry, that was the thing that really was easy to find in it. So the other thing that you pointed out too was the fact that the reference to SAFe, right, and the difference between SAFe and recipe books and so forth. But SAFe, I don't really want to harp on too much about it, but does have a lot in the whole lean and the principles and the values area. So maybe they did it to compete. I don't know.
Yeah, that was
possible.
Or to align.
And particularly with Nexus coming on board as well, right, which is trying to play in that space.
Mm.
And less... Right. Less has values as well, right?
Surely we could Google that quickly. Desktop works.
Does Dad have values?
It does.
No, Mum has values, but Dad doesn't. Dad's valueless. Oh, okay. You're talking about the method, aren't you? Sorry. Yeah.
Craig and I had that discussion the other day that we really need an agile methodology called Mum because we've got a dad.
and we said the only thing you should say is shh because you want to keep Mum on it.
So there's principles and less. Doesn't look like there's values, though.
Interesting.
Okay.
And the principles are queuing theory, empirical process control, systems thinking, lean thinking, continuous improvement towards perfection, customer-centric, whole product focus, more with less, transparency, and large-scale scrum is scrum.
I'm sorry, but I guess I'm getting old, but what was wrong with the values and the principles of the manifesto as opposed to all these different ones?
Well, to Les's credit, it says...
They're not values, for a start. Mm.
And Les says that the Les principles guided them in creating Les, and other principles you might want to explore include the Agile Manifesto, Deming's 14 Points from Out of the Crisis, TQM, and Being Agile Rather than Doing Agile and Avoiding False Dichotomies, both of which are from the same book, Scaling Agile and Lean Development.
Did you just say TQM?
Yes.
Oh, my God, I haven't heard that mentioned in 20 years.
Total quality Management Control, an early and excellent book on this, is What is Total Quality Control, the Japanese Way?
Mm-hmm. But to your question, Tony, officially the Agile Manifesto values, whilst they call them values, aren't actually values.
Yeah. All right. I won't argue the point. But they work for me.
Yes.
Segwaying, have you seen that there is a survey out for the moment surveying the need for an Agile Manifesto 2.0?
Oh, yes.
And will this ever go away?
Yes. I'll tell you when this will go away, the moment that a 2.0 is done. Because then they'll be talking about a 3.0.
Well, the problem is whoever comes up with a 2.0, it's never going to have the same prevalence.
Correct.
Because there's just too many people that can't agree. So the questions he's got in the survey. Question one, is there a need for an Agile Manifesto 2.0?
No.
Please explain your opinion. Be specific and insightful, by the way, Tony. That's what the question says.
Okay, Q rant. Let it go, people. You can't make it better.
Renee, it still works. Is there a need for an Agile Manifesto 2.0? Please explain your opinion.
Yes and no. Okay, so...
No, it's a radio button. You can only press yes or no.
Yes.
Actually, I'll give you that. You can press other, which I'm not sure why they put that option there. Probably for you.
Gender neutrality on it. But the working software, like I hate the fact that Agile keeps being tied to software development. And I know that it's its roots and I know that's where the Agile Manifesto came out with. But for the life of me, couldn't we just refer to it as knowledge work and move on and think about working smarter and valuable outcomes? It's valuable outcomes over software, over comprehensive documentation. Anyway. That's Q rant finished. Anyway.
Well, Q my rant. It's like trying to make Ghostbusters the new version or the Or the new version of Splash or the new version of Top Gun.
Are they making a new version of Splash? Are they? Because I love Splash.
Yes, so why would you do it?
But isn't the problem with Splash that the mermaid's gonna be male or something?
Yeah, well I see my point. You can't make it better, people. And the fact that it's still relevant today.
No, I want to highlight, because everyone's going to say this is somewhat irrelevant, but everyone who wrote the Agile Manifesto, the people who were involved, all men. And the two movies that you're just bitching about is over gender switching. So I would like to highlight, it'd be great if a woman was involved in here somehow.
Okay. I don't disagree with you there, but I think, you know, back when they did it, that was just the software
industry at the time.
I want a new one.
I want some women involved in it.
And I think if you talk to those pundits, I know at least one of them I've talked to, you know, he has a great respect for females within the industry and admits that at that time there just weren't any in those particular positions, right? Now, just quickly, in case anybody thinks I was ranting against Ghostbusters because it was female, it had nothing to do with it. My rant was purely because they've touched the movie they shouldn't have touched in the first place and they can't make it better. Doesn't matter who was in it. Keep going.
Nice one, Craig.
Well, you guys don't have anything to talk about, so I'd make something up.
Yeah.
Question three, how do people in the Agile community recognize you? A, Agilist practitioner. 2, Agile leader in organization. 3, Agile coach. 4, trainer. 5, thought leader. 6, I'm one of those 17. 7, other.
That's brilliant.
I think everyone who does that survey should vote other, and in the response being, I wasn't one of those 17.
Oh, everyone should just click on one of those 17 just for a laugh.
That's what I was going to say. I'd like to click on that and see what happens when they get 300 one of those 17s.
Well, shouldn't by rights, if they've written the survey in a quality way, it should actually stop working after there's been 17 clicks of that option?
Well, it's
interesting. Acceptance criteria in the story?
Mm-hmm. And this is MVP.
Anyway, you can vote for this. This is being done by Kamlish Raviani, a practitioner, coach, and trainer, who's decided that he wants to collect opinions on behalf of the Agile community.
The interesting thing is Joshua Kerievsky has done a recent blog post around Agile is old and needs to be made modern, which
is
accessible on SD Times. And I was just looking at his response to it, and he says, instead of the 4 old principles, I propose 4 new principles of the modern Agile. So he doesn't call it 2.0, but modern Agile. Make people awesome.
If you could first stop reading SD Times, go over to InfoQ and read my article on the same topic, Renee, that would be a lot better.
Yes. I don't have time to read, Craig. I'm busy being sick. Anyway, make people awesome. Deliver value continuously. Make safety a prerequisite. Experiment and learn rapidly.
So as Tony and I spoke about in the last podcast, this was the keynote that Joshua delivered at Agile 2016 on Modern Agile.
Yes.
Nothing new, because we actually spoke about this last year when he first put out the blog post on this, when he had the overlapping circle diagram of the things that that make up Modern Agile, which I actually still like. He said that it was kind of his thought process and he doesn't use it anymore, but I actually kind of liked the original Modern Agile diagram because it had some guidance for you about what those things mean. So make users awesome was about charring your work, leveraging lean startup, blameless retrospectives, making it safe to fail, experiment and learn rapidly was, you know, things like lean UX and collaborate and integrate frequently. Making safety a prerequisite was respect and appreciate people, and deliver value continuously was all about flow, product communities, testing and refactoring. And the circles overlapped, so some of those are in multiple circles as they overlapped. But he decided that it was, in order to get some traction, he just made it very simple and put it into the 4 quadrants, which are just make people awesome, deliver value continuously, make safety a prerequisite, and experiment and learn rapidly. And the interesting thing which I sort of took away from, which I wrote in the InfoQ article, is how it's somehow also lined up with the pillars of lean across the top of it, which was quite interesting.
Ooh. Thoughts, Renee? Because I've already expelled my thoughts on that to Craig once before. But
yeah, I mean, I like that whole make people awesome. I think it's a bit too broad, but as a focusing point, I think it's great. Obviously, experiment and learn rapidly is the heart. There's nothing about quality, which I think is interesting, though you could probably argue quality goes aligned with people awesomeness. Safety a prerequisite. You'd hope if you were experimenting and learning rapidly, it's an embedded part of that. So,
which is exactly why. Yeah. In fact, the safety one was for me the real learning that came out from the keynote he gave at Agile 2016. Because it's something that I think we assume, and as coaches, we do try hard to put it in there. But in order to be successful, that's a very important component. And examples that he gave in the talk were really trying to learn from other industries, like if you're on the factory floor or those type of things, where it's very important that that safety is important. But from a knowledge work perspective, it's more the psychological safety.
Ooh.
It is interesting, like the two sides being very process related and the top and the bottom being very touchy-feely people related.
Yeah, and so what he said is he laid the pillars of lean. So the pillars of lean go horizontally and vertically across the pillars.
Okay.
So my question, which is going to start a whole conversation, I keep hearing this modern agile and I keep hearing this new agile and I keep hearing these things. But the reality of it is when I think back to why I got into Agile and doing Agile and the best experiences of Agile teams that I've ever worked in and working with people, I keep coming back to the fact that none of it's changed in essence to the originality of what I started doing in the beginning. And in fact, I find myself, the more I grow as a coach, the more I find whenever I work with teams that I go back to the basics. So you can give it the modern tap, you can give it the pretty paint, you can call it Lean UX, you can call it this, but the reality of it for me is they're really, really, really good teams are the ones who are brilliant at those original Agile basics that we all started with.
Yeah.
And just previous to the podcast, Renee and I were talking about a project that she was on with a bunch of people where it was fantastic.
And that was pre-Agile days.
Right, but you were still doing many of the things that we hold on to dear now, right?
Yeah, small teams, just get it done quickly.
Getting stuff done.
Learn. Yep. Who would have thought?
So maybe small teams
getting stuff done.
Well, this was the message in his, which is what that SD Times article is focused on, because it's the highlight. But his contention was, in the keynote he made, pretty much most of the audience get a tear in the eye because he showed a home video of his young daughter learning to ride a bike, and she's learning and she's trying to move through. And his contention was is that when we send people down the Agile journey, we often start with Scrum. We say, here's some iterations, here's some stuff, here's some rules of the game. It's the easiest place to start, which is like putting people on training wheels. And his contention is that when he taught his daughter to ride the bike, he didn't use training wheels. The thing was he taught her how to balance first. And sometimes our old ways of thinking that we've always done Scrum, so it's a good way to start, then we can go to Kanban or other modern methods afterwards, is not necessarily the best approach, which I think that was the headline that lots of people took away from that, and then becomes that, oh, well, Scrum is dead. And he made the comment that, Scrum served its purpose, it's been great, but maybe it's time to go to the retirement home. Yeah. They play poker on Thursday nights.
I guess that's an interesting one for me, because I guess in knowing you too well, we didn't start with Scrum. And I very much doubt that when you walk into a team, Craig or Renee, you start them off on Scrum. You may use attributes of Scrum, but the reality of it is you still go back to those basics that we've always used. You have that basic toolkit. Thoughts?
Well, there's a difference when you're using that, you know, the inverted commas, agile, close inverted commas, as opposed to any particular method.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of people out there that say, look, when you teach agile, just start by teaching the principles and the values and let the teams evolve and discover the ways that work. In fact, I had a discussion today around that with someone, and I actually, like, I love that as a concept and as an idea, but the reality is sometimes people just want direction. Sometimes they just want to know, like, I know what I'm doing isn't working. Can you give me something? And I don't think giving values and principles is giving them something that they actually can tangibly do differently. It's different per person. It's different per team. But I've definitely met teams that just needed to do something first before they could actually conceptualize and understand the values better. Crickets.
Okay. There was a bit of silence then. I was waiting for Craig to chime in. Okay. So it still hasn't answered my
question. I agree.
So it's an interesting conundrum, I guess. And it's not that I'm against everything evolving. Don't get me wrong, because I think there's some good things that we've learned over the periods of time. But again, the more I see it, the more I mean, as Craig and I discussed, I've always held true to the principle number 10 on what you call everybody has their principle on the manifesto, and simplicity, the art of maximizing the amount of work not done as essential, to me, is one of the key factors that I work with when I work with teams.
I'm just more can't get over the fact that you think you're a 10, Tony.
Just call me Bo, baby.
I think that people don't appreciate that sometimes, as much as it sounds horrible as a word, but they're in the unconsciously incompetent space. And you actually need to give them something to start to move out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess we can wax lyrical against it, but it is what it is. But I don't think it's going to change what I do.
Okay. So, moving on then.
Anybody in there? You just want me to keep throwing things out there?
No, I got one. So, it was a Mike Cohen blog. I can't remember what it was, but I did note it down. But he was talking about the definition of ready.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing as I have the pair of you here, and we're having a bit of fun tonight, what's your thoughts on definition of ready? Is it something you use? Do you see it as essential to teams? Or has it done its lid? Is it something we shouldn't be using more? Thoughts?
Well, to be clear, the article from Mike was about dangers of the definition of ready, if I remember rightly, was it not?
That is correct, yes, but I was sort of paraphrasing that to ask you what your thoughts were rather than going straight to what he was saying. But you are correct. He was saying the definition of ready is not always a good idea. There are dangers inherent in it, but I thought I might tap into your thoughts, Craig.
So interestingly, when I deliver training, I hope my bosses aren't listening now, I skipped the slide on the definition of ready.
Do you skip the slide on the definition of done?
Absolutely not.
Right.
He wouldn't dare.
And why not?
Because he's testing hard.
Well, I think the reason is that typically in the course, and particularly because we're teaching Agile in the IC Agile framework as opposed to Scrum, a lot of the course thus far has been about all the pre-steps that you really need to do to set yourself up for success in the actual sprint or iteration. And so, you know, the whole thing about, you know, understanding your users, story mapping, writing good stories, mm-hmm. getting a prioritized backlog, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff is, to me, all of the things that make you ready. And having a definition of that when I've already spent 2 days talking about that stuff is... One slide is not really going to cut it. So to me, it's kind of built in there, and it's just another term and another thing to remember. Whereas the definition of done, to me, is extremely important, because your acceptance criteria can only go so far. Your acceptance criteria really needs to be story related. Your definition of done is your opportunity to essentially have that policy, your done policy, to say all these things. It's a checklist to say all these things on every story card should be something you consider to move it from not done to done.
Yeah, I mean, I must personally say that I prefer definition of done over definition of ready. I find that there's a lot of crossovers between them. So teams, when they say work's done, where they go, well, it's actually ready for the next step. And whilst syntactically that is correct, there's part of it which is around how you conceive the work. Is it work that's ready for the next step, or is it work that's completed and the quality control's actually been met? And I think I'd probably prefer the quality focus and the quality lens associated with it. That said, there are a few instances where I do feel definition of ready is quite valid, probably the predominant one being when you're in a situation, a large set of teams, and you've got work coming in from many different stakeholders,
yes.
To actually say, yes, we're actually ready to start doing something with that work, to give expectations back to stakeholders that it's not done, it's ready for us to start doing something. It's a bit of a language shift, and you could argue it's still a done, but that's probably the only reason that I would use it.
Well, it wasn't okay. the original point of definition of ready in a Scrum sense to say this is this story is ready to be accepted into the iteration. And the problem with that is that it then pushes quite often a very waterfall approach to thinking about getting all the analysis done before you start. Whereas in some teams, yeah. you want to have that three amigos discussion, and you may discover things along the way. And so trying to come up with something that is actually a clear definition of ready was being misunderstood. I mean, there are ways of writing that. I mean, your definition of ready can just say, hey, this is a story that is ready for the key members of the team to sit down and talk about.
Yeah.
I guess I agree with Renee. For definition ready for me, I only use it in certain instances. So most of what you've said, I agree with totally. And so the instances were obviously where you're scaling.
Does that mean you don't agree with anything I said then, Tony?
Oh, I agree with you as well.
you're singling me out there for a moment.
Oh, sorry.
I am sick. It is a sympathy vote. Don't take it personal.
Well, it's because you sounded like a munchkin at the beginning of the show, but let's not go there. The thing for me, when you have a very large scaling situation with a lot of inputs to the work coming in, I find that it's a very useful tool. The other one that I see that it's quite a useful tool is where you walk into a team situation or where they've already got the bad behaviours in place, where they're accepting work into the flow that doesn't have acceptance criteria. It doesn't have, you know, the right stories haven't been elaborated and with the group or those types of things. I mean, there's a number of things you could do. I find definition of ready is a good thing to get them back on track. It's not a long-term thing, but it's saying, well, let's start using this to start getting you back into the right behaviours.
So is the definition of ready, in your opinion, the story is ready to be started, or it should be able to be brought into the sprint?
For me, it's able to be brought into the flow. So whether it be sprint or it be Kanban, I don't mind either way. That left you quiet, didn't it?
I also agreed with everything you said, Tony, so there you go.
Oh, okay, good. All right.
Next.
Renee, your turn.
I guess when you were talking, I was thinking about as well the shifting and the growing changes in the industry. If you talk about modern agile, I think there's a lot more appreciation around work that's in flow for teams or that's in sprint for teams. I sort of call it in play. And then there's this concept that I use around pipeline. And I think there's a growing appreciation through a lot of the scaling methods and through enterprise services planning and so forth and the changes to Kanban that there's this something around pipeline that it actually deserves recognition of the complexity that's associated with it. And in my mind, there's distinct visualization techniques that differ between pipeline and play. I guess I was interested in either of your opinion as to whether you saw that in the workplaces that you're in as a problem and whether people were tackling it as a newer agile thing these days.
That's a good question. I haven't really thought through it, but yeah, I do see it in the I do see it. Are people tackling it as a UR agile thing? Yeah, I do. I do believe that some people are tackling it that way, Renee. Craig?
Yeah, people are taking the portfolio level a lot more seriously than they have in the past. Back when, you know, back in the good old days when we started out, it was it was a project or a team that was just trying to figure out the stuff they need to do. But now because the whole thing's jumped the shark and whole organizations are on board of it, it means that, you know, people are taking a lot more seriously how they tackle the portfolio. Are they doing it well? That's a different question.
Yeah, I'm seeing an awful lot of it feels like waterfall, just disguise sort of stuff. And in fact, I saw something the other day that when I looked at it and I looked at it in more and more detail, I thought, oh my goodness, it almost feels like when we start to take Agile to the portfolio, then program, then a pipeline or in play or whatever, what do you want to talk about at project level? It almost feels like when you think about the cycle time, and you're measuring it at these different functional decomposition levels, that we're just doing the same things and just calling it different language. So, you know, I take my business requirements and I put them into system requirements. Then I do my software detailed design. And then, you know, I'm still going to build it and then I'm going to test it. It's almost like a V model happening, and yet we're still doing sprints. And I'm not saying that we're not delivering and shipping inside of that sprint or potentially shipping inside of that sprint. But in reality, in enterprises, they're still doing lots of sprints and then integrating, as an example. And it just really feels like we're not doing Agile.
But is that because the organizations you're thinking of in question in reality are still on that journey, that they still have old style funding models in place, that we still have projects and programs and all those type of things, and so in which case your cycle time from idea through to delivery is going to be reasonably long.
But even if it's not projects and programs, you're still probably thinking about it these levels. If you look at a number of different scale methods, that, like SAFe, for example, talks about epic, then capability, then feature, then story, you're still effectively doing this breakdown and this decomposition. I'm not saying you're doing it all upfront like you do in Waterfall, but there's still a V model going on.
But I guess at any, if you're doing any, solving any large problem, you do need to go down that way, because that's the criticism of the lean startup, in that it doesn't actually stop to think about the more holistic complexity. Product.
I completely agree that it's where complexity comes into play in these large enterprises that I just feel like we still don't have it nailed.
Tony?
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, the minute you introduce that amount of complexity, the harder it is.
Anyway, Craig, you got anything?
Well, I just want to end that thing off in saying that I agree with you that I think it's the hard thing that we haven't nailed yet, and despite the fact that we have things around the outside that are trying to change that, we have different management methods and leadership methods. We've had things like beyond budgeting. We have things around motivation and drive, and there's been lots of things poking from different angles. It's still an interesting one that we haven't quite nailed, and I feel that's because to your point earlier, that we haven't really done enough to take this outside of the software domain, because at the end of the day, when all these things are all the other domains that are trying to make sense of you know, what we're trying to do more commonly where we've started in software, we haven't thought about how to do it better in other domains, and even ask the question, you know, was there a problem in the first place?
Well, I think what's interesting is that there always is a problem, and I find it intriguing when people go, "Well, agile doesn't work," and I go, "Well, did your other approach work either?" And oh no. Okay, so you tried something and it didn't work, so we're just going to try going back to the old method. Oh, probably not. So what are you going to do? Well, maybe I'll find something that works. Okay, that's a start. What is that? Inspect and adapt. You know, give something a go. Try, test, learn. Oh, sounds pretty agile.
Yeah, but I think humans in general, though, you know, unless you have a scientific background, humans in general, you know, it's the same thing. If you're going to go and buy a house or a car, you know, you stop, you think, you do all your research. It's just a human trait that when we're going to do something reasonably large, we stop and we think about it.
Yeah.
And so that's built into organisations. You know, if you've got a scientific approach to it, which is what we're really trying to say in that experimentation, well, then you think about it differently. And so that's our education piece, is making people think differently about experimentation. That and our words are probably too technical and too scientific at the moment. Because you talk about hypothesis, and most people just look at you blankly. That's something they learnt in year 8 science and, you know, forgot about because, you know, they were happy going down the route of doing accounting or arts or an English major or whatever it be. Unless you actually stayed in that technology or science realm, all those things weren't really relevant.
Well, pro tip, you could change it to assumption.
But the problem with assumption is a bit like it's a word a bit like estimate, right? Is that people don't like it?
Potentially, it's overloaded. Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. I've got nothing to add then.
Okay, moving on.
All right, I got one little one for you. It was an article I read a little while ago, but I've kept it just because I thought we might have actually had a chance to talk before now. But dear to our heart.
So this article coming from 2007.
Yeah, that's the one. I don't even know. Somebody sent it to me, and it was extreme programming is as relevant now as it is before as it was before. Have you seen that one, Craig, Renee?
Didn't we talk about that on another podcast?
It probably never got
released. No.
Probably that we haven't released, yeah.
Well, no.
I agree, Tony. I concur.
Not released. It's actually just probably never actually. It probably failed in the all the podcasts right. that we've recorded that never made it.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, yeah. I concur.
Tell us about it, Tony.
No, look, again, it's just I've been rereading some of those things, and some of those things that it still has in it just still ring home true to me when you're working with software particularly.
Yeah, like metaphors.
Hey, don't beat up on metaphors. They're the most misunderstood part of XP, Renee. Don't you forget it.
There's always got to be one, isn't there? I thought you were sick.
I know, but I still love being in trouble.
But I like the way, you know, it still keeps a focus on design all the time. That's what XP was very good at.
Yeah. I mean, obviously things like test-driven development, collective code ownership.
Continuous refactoring,
pair programming. These are all awesome still, definitely.
And yet we're still not doing them well. We still see them failing because people have floated away from that and gone more over to some of the other methods
and the reality is, what's failing, Tony?
When I say failing, is that they're not doing it.
Yeah. Hasn't DevOps sort of absorbed a lot of this anyway?
Yeah.
No, you just buy a tool. Can't you do that? You can buy a DevOps tool.
I think you might, your sample size might be a little limited to a certain extent, Tony. The people who are doing good software are doing good practices. So I see a lot of it. It's when you get into some of the larger corporates where there's no the drive or the emphasis is not on good software, right? It's on just getting something out to solve an internal business problem. That's where it seems to fall apart, because the people running the show, that's not their focus.
Yeah, and so probably I am talking at that sort of level, but it wouldn't be just one sample. I see a lot of samples of that where
in software companies.
I'd actually have to agree. In tech companies.
Tech companies.
You're agreeing with me. You're agreeing with Tony.
I can think of some examples, Craig, in Australia of tech companies that don't do a lot of pair programming.
Yeah.
So I'm not suggesting that every tech company is good, but what I'm suggesting is that for the most part, those practices, if they're going to remain in business, they have to employ some of those things. But pair programming is not the be-all and end-all.
No.
Because if you've got distributed teams, there has been newer practices that have replaced pair programming as options. Like Git pull requests. Git pull requests are a really good way of making sure that you build code review into the process. But doesn't mean you need to have two people sitting together at a machine.
I don't disagree with you. I have interactions with small companies. I have interactions just through the community and things like that. One of the things I see, interestingly enough, is that whilst the term minimum viable product is very important to some of these, sometimes that push to get that software out quick means that they don't take some of these practices on, or they put things out that are probably inferior to what they should have in the first place because they think they can pivot quickly.
Yeah, but I'm not entirely sure. I mean, if you think about pair programming, for example, it's not going to stop all those things. I mean, even some of the largest companies, of late have made some pretty bonehead, rollouts in relation to software. Apple Music, anybody?
Yeah.
I think that's just the music that they release for free. That's bonehead decisions, but...
Well, no, the problem with Apple Music was the fact that it went and deleted all your music.
That's right.
Oh, I missed that.
Yes. Deleted all your music and then put it up in the cloud. And then when you tried to
bring hello, did then when you tried
back, it was copyrighted.
Well, they put digital rights management around it. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah. Digital rights management.
And so the problem is in that quest for getting out sooner. There are things that sneak through the cracks.
Was that working as intended?
What, Apple Music?
The delete? Yeah, yeah.
It's the fact of the matter is that it's a complex problem. I think as what I heard recently, when people try to explain this way, it's a complex computer science problem, Renee. Because in the lab you can test for the perfect world is everybody runs their music off the Apple Cloud or streams it. But the problem is that if you have a very rare version of your favorite song, let's just call it Britney Spears, Oops, I Did It Again, and you call it the same as the version that is on the server, then it the algorithm sometimes can't figure out that your version with an extra 2 seconds of music in it or whatever is any different. And so if you've just got a standard collection where you've taken your music and you ripped it off CDs and then you're fine, but as soon as you even remotely start to step outside of that realm, with different versions or
like artists,
well, yeah, the same song from different artists, the same or different versions of a song, like live recordings, bootlegs, all those type of things, which lots of people have. The software was having trouble dealing with that, and the problem is.
I was thinking of DJs, for example.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is it worked on my machine.
Yeah,
because you've got bootleg.
No, it worked. It works in the it works for the 80%, right? Unfortunately, the most vocal of your users in that point were the 20%.
Yeah, who took exception to the fact that they lost all their music. Mm.
But that's just one such example, right? There are lots of examples out there where things didn't go exactly according to plan. Australian census, anybody?
So most people who listen to us in any country outside of Australia won't have a clue what that is.
Well, Obamacare, anyone. We can just take the words and change them and they mean the same thing.
Very good. Very good. I guess, look, we could wax on for ages, but I still think that, those basic practices that we first fell in love with, that got us really started on the journey, code first, agile, that type of stuff, it's still valid today.
But the thing is, I think in 1990, whatever it was, 8, when the Extreme Programming book came out, the people who read that book, the people who applied it, were good software engineers. Fast forward to 2016, the people that are still applying good software engineering practices are good software engineers. The practices have changed. They're now the ones that have moved on to pair programming. They've moved on to property-based testing instead of test-driven development. The practices have evolved. They've moved on to continuous delivery. They've moved on to DevOps. The good software engineers are always going to do the good practices. The problem was that there was a whole pile of other people in the middle there, either because they weren't aware or because their bosses were not wanting them to spend time on gold-plating solutions or whatever it might be, are the ones that weren't doing that. And no, I don't think the method is going to help you there, because that's ultimately why a lot of the agile practices themselves fail. It's because the thing that the organization wants to do is different. They're actually not really interested in investing in that. It's just all about money and time and pumping stuff out.
I guess so. I mean, there's different instances of it, but I also see that we seem to have got away from a lot of those things that we held dear in terms of the testing practices, Craig. And you know how much we both cared about quality. How often do you see that just left behind now?
Well, all I'm saying is I don't see it left behind any more than I've seen it in the past, because there are some really awesome things happening in the testing community and some really great innovations, and there are organizations that are really kicking goals and taking that stuff really seriously. But they're the same types of organizations that were experimenting with those things 15 years ago. And so the problem is that what we haven't been able to do is bridge that gap to a lot of other people, to convince them to say, you know what, you could be a lot more, have a lot more benefits if you take this stuff seriously. And I don't know whether that's because it's too hard, whether that's because bosses won't let people because people are lazy. I don't know what it is. And it's hard for me to throw stones because I'm on that side of the fence that saw those things and went, I'm going for it. So I can't understand why people wouldn't do it. But you're right. Yeah. I still see lots of teams that don't do it, but I don't want to cast aspersion, because I actually think there are lots of people who are doing really awesome at that, or trying really hard to do it really well.
I'd say the answer probably is quite complex. People aren't aware of it, so there's that unconscious incompetence, or people are not empowered through a variety of number of different reasons. But it's interesting. I think it is a really difficult problem, I acknowledge.
Yeah, and I know, for example, the Agile Alliance, at the conference, they were talking about some of the programs they're trying to run, and one of the ones they're trying to run is a discussion on how to deal with technical debt. And when I heard that, I sort of thought, really, is that still a thing that people don't understand? And when you start digging into that, you actually realize how many people still don't fully get the problem of technical debt. It is still a thing.
Everything's still a thing.
That's exactly right. So it just depends on which lens you're looking at through, and unfortunately sometimes depending on the teams we're working with or the lens we're looking through, I think sometimes we can be blindsided. Either things are a lot better than they are, or things are a lot worse than they are. And so all my point is that I'm working with some corporates now where I completely agree with you, Tony, that they wouldn't know good testing practices or good development practices if they tripped over them in the middle of the night. But I also am aware of teams doing really, really awesome stuff.
Sure. I liken this to any domain at all. So even if I relate it to a silly thing such as making coffee, there are very few speciality shops that do coffee really well. And those are the people who are passionate about it, who care about it, who spend their own time investigating on the ways that make it better. And 85% of cafes couldn't be bothered.
But is that a little different? I mean, I take your example there, but if we debate that out a little bit, the problem is that it depends on what you're, you know, what you're after. If you're just after a beverage and you don't really know that there is anything better out there, then that may be okay.
So how does it relate to products that software builds? Is that any different?
Because sometimes they don't work. Your cup of coffee is still going to work.
I can guarantee you I've had coffees that don't work. They've been that bad, I've had to throw them.
But you're in that 1% too, that you know what really good coffee tastes like.
Oh, I think there's a few instances where they left the cleaning fluid inside the actual machine. But
Yeah, there are always those. I get that.
But I think it's interesting because I think, I got to say there's a lot of competition in some of these service space areas that we build software for, and customers do move around an awful lot, but sometimes, people just stick with what they've got because it's what they're used to. And it's like I just stick to the nearest cafe store because it's close and convenient. I just stick to the current provider for service X because it's convenient, not because they're doing anything awesome.
Yeah, but if they continue to keep putting cleaning liquid in your coffee, I can guarantee you that you'll walk another block to go to the next one.
Yes, but I guess that's like, interestingly, 5% absolutely scenarios that annoy people off so much that they'll go looking. There's probably a block of about 80% that are just ordinary consumers that only go looking if they hit that 5% or the 10% sort of mark of I'm after something special. I just think the reality is humanity means that there's an awful lot of mediocrity in knowledge work.
But the problem is that when we talk about knowledge work, though, the quality is not often the biggest concern. It's usually the speed to market.
Yeah, very true.
Which is not unlike coffee.
That's right. So if you go to that coffee shop and they always take 20 minutes in order to make your coffee and they don't acknowledge you for the first five, then you're probably going to go elsewhere, right? Because service is often more of a distinction than just an average cup of coffee.
Yeah, I would have agreed with you a few weeks ago, but interestingly, I got the Hey You app and now I just order my coffee online. And I walk up to the cafe. I don't even have to say hi to a barista. I look at the lids. I pick up my coffee and I keep on walking.
And so that's fine. But imagine if you picked up your coffee for the next five times you do that and it's stone cold.
Which is a quality issue.
Here we go.
Well, is it a quality issue or is it a delivery issue?
Well, arguably it could be my issue because I actually applied the button too early.
Could be.
Or it's a quality issue. Actually, probably would blame myself in this particular context because I know the time that it takes me to walk to there. And anyway, it's interesting.
But if they get your order and they go, I'll make it now, even though you said that you're going to pick it up in 20 minutes, is that that's a scheduling issue, right?
That would be if the app does that, but it doesn't do that.
I mean, the thing is that you can look at things from very different contexts.
True.
Because the coffee could be the best coffee in the world. It's just cold.
Yeah.
In which case, I'd probably just put it in a microwave and heat it up.
So you're telling me that for 20 minutes you've told me about how awesome coffee is and now you're telling me you put it in the microwave. Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's a really trick.
It's because generally it's not the heat that matters. It's the quality of – anyway, let's move on.
We've moved into adaptive planning there.
Weren't we talking about XP? Wasn't that how we got here?
We were talking about XP. I started this, which was very good.
thanks for that, Tony.
That was one of my better ones. Have we got anything else? We're reaching the end of this.
Yeah. What are we reading?
Oh,
Renee, what have you been reading while you've been on your sick bed?
I haven't been reading. I've been doing writing. That's about it.
Yes, I must say I've been a bit slack in the reading arena as well, to be honest. Been too busy. Craig, have you been reading? You've been on planes and trains and buses and stuff.
I have. I've been into a few things. I've been getting into the portfolio a little more. So I mentioned this on the last podcast, and I'm still working my way through it. I've gone and re-picked up the Disciplined Agile Delivery book. One of the things that struck out to me a little bit as I wandered around the corridors of Agile 2016 in Atlanta was scaling was there, but it wasn't as in your face this year. At least, all the vendors were still there, but it had just become a little more... that's just what everybody does, particularly from in the sponsor booths. But as I was kind of walking past, I looked at and I actually went and sat in the back of Dean Leffingwell's talk for a little while. Say four, yeah, there's some interesting stuff in there, but there's still the same. It's all the same. Nexus still hasn't got a lot of traction. There wasn't anything much on Less at all. There was very few people actually talking about Less, which was interesting. But Disciplined Agile Delivery has just gone through a little bit of a rebranding, and I mentioned this on the last podcast with you, Tony. But I think I glossed over that. I probably I didn't give that as much attention as the others. So I've decided to go back and have a look at the book and just be informed. So that's what I'm reading at the moment.
Okay, and then you can inform us.
Yeah, nothing much to inform at the moment. I'm still in the early chapters, where it's really just talking about team-based stuff. There's absolutely nothing earth-shattering in there yet. But what I do like about Disciplined Agile Delivery is that it does take that whole of IT approach, which is some of the problems I'm trying to deal with. So I am interested in about what it does have to say about things like governance and infrastructure and operations, which some of the others... I know Safe Version 4 does bring those things in, but just interested to see what it has to say about that.
Okay. Well, then don't forget you have to come up with something for Mum, of course, if we have a dad.
Yeah, we tried that acronym last week, Tony. We didn't have any luck with that, so.
No, well, that's your task. Continuous improvement, Craig.
Thank you, Tony. Haven't you got some signing off things to do or something?
Oh, yeah. All right. So, well, that only leaves one thing left to say, and that is...
Where do we find you, Tony? Me.
You can find me at Tony at the Agile Revolution.
Or Renee at theagilerevolution.com.
Craig, for some reason, at theagilerevolution.com.
And that leaves us really one final thing to say.
What other final thing to say?
Yeah, the second one final thing to say.
Well, we started this podcast in fine style. We might as well finish it.
I've already said it. You guys got to go now.
Once a train wreck, always a train wreck.
That's it. Ready? One, two, three.
Viva la revolution. Get out of here.
Oh my God, that's a cracker.